These are things which people cannot realize. You have to see these things in order to appreciate this kind of transformation. I do not think the honorable member will contradict me either here or outside. And he will say, I use it as a symbol because he was the biggest jagirdar in the whole of the Indo-Pakistan subcontinent and a very powerful tribal chief. And as I said, only a decade ago, those same people, I used to go there very often, and I used to see their attitude, their outlook, their behavior, their responses. And now this time, when during the flood, I went and I saw a real change, as if they were different people, as if the shackles had really broken, and the mentality was different. So this is the point of the present struggle. The point of the present struggle is that how did the pre-Pakistan People's Party acquire such a sweeping mandate in these elections? Pakistan People's Party acquired a sweeping mandate in this election because we have tyrannized the people, because we have put people under the yoke, because we have put women under shutters, because we have shaved off women's heads, because we have cut off people's hands, because we have not given laborers any rights and benefits, because we have not brought about any land reform. Ladies and gentlemen, the outcome of the election, if it is analyzed, can be understood very clearly. The outcome of the elections is that the people of Pakistan are a conscious people. The people of Pakistan are a civilized people. The people of Pakistan come from one of the oldest civilizations of the world, the Indus civilization. They come from a very civilized part of the world. And, well, by a process of political education, they have, during the election, in the first election ever held in the history of the country, well, they went and heard everyone. This is also part of the political process. This is also part of their political education, that they went out and they heard everyone. They wanted to hear that, all right, what have you to offer? What have you to give? Let us see what pledges you make to us. What is your manifesto? What is your promise? What is your program? What is your promise to us? And they wanted to hear these things. But what did they hear instead? I do not want to say what they heard instead. I think that it would not be fair, for two reasons, for me not to say what they heard. One is because the combined opposition has chosen not to be present here, and since they are not present here, I would not like to say something to which they cannot answer, as I said yesterday. And secondly, this audience, as a matter of fact, for me, all audience, whether this distinguished audience of diplomats, of generals, of governors, of ministers, or if it is an audience of sweepers, of beggars, of scavengers, of peasants, to me, they are both honorable and respected because they are both human. But I have to maintain the decorum of the house. I cannot tell you when people went in thousands, yes, not in thousands, in hundreds of thousands to hear them, because they wanted to know. They wanted to know that when the People's Party, when the Pakistan People's Party has done so much for the people of Pakistan, yet an opposition has arisen against the Pakistan People's Party, maybe they might have even more to offer to us. Maybe they might have even greater benefits for us. Because if this party, which has done so much for the people, if this party is challenged and opposed, then that party must be having such a magnificent program for us, for our welfare, for our well-being, that they might give us something better to offer than the Pakistan People's Party. And they went and they heard them. And as I told you, that since they are not here, I would not like to mention what they said. But I will tell you, I cannot tell you, Ami, that what language they used, how foul was their vocabulary. And the point is that neither I, nor my colleague, nor anybody associated with us would like to run away, would like to not face the bitter situation, truthful or false. This is the place where the final judgment of such matters is made, in public speeches, in processions. People can lose their senses, they can become emotional, although we also have had processions, although we have also had public meetings. But I can say with again satisfaction that throughout this public campaign of 8 weeks, we kept our calm, we maintained our equilibrium, we maintained our sense of propriety. We talked about issues. People in glass houses cannot afford to throw stones at others. But these gentlemen, they did not talk about the program. They did not talk about social economic matters. They did not talk about welfare of the people. They did not talk about how they are going to enhance their economic and their social and their spiritual lives. As I said, they abused in slander and filth. And that is why I would tell you, all of you, because I keep no secrets from you, that I said that I must have represented in this house not only myself, but those close to me who were willfully, mercilessly, uncharitably, unkindly, and viciously, invidiously, and insidiously attacked on the public platform. So here we can face them if they have the courage and the integrity to come to this house. And in this house, which is the final arbiter of all these things, to say what is the truth and what is false. Therefore, I said, come and get represented. This is where we will be able to see where truth lies and where falsehood lies. These are some of the reasons for my having chosen some of the representatives. That if they are to be attacked willfully, mercilessly, the place where they are to be answered, where they have to be faced, if they also have the courage and integrity, then this is the place where they have to be faced and where they have to be answered. But what have they done? We have come because our hands are clean. We have come and we are prepared to face. We are prepared to talk. We are prepared to answer. We are prepared to speak. But they have chosen not to come. They have chosen to desert. They not only their seats, but desert the representatives, they desert the people whom they represent, and they have not come. So, ladies and gentlemen, my point is that People's Party has won on merit. People's Party has won because of its record. People's Party has won this election because the Pakistan People's Party has rendered yeoman service to the common people of Pakistan. I know who voted for us. I know the people who voted for us. It is crystal clear. People who voted for us have been the downtrodden masses, the silent people, the people living in the villages, the people living in our millions of villages, hundreds and thousands of villages. Those millions have voted for us, who do not have to pay any more taxes on 25 acres of land and less than 25 acres of land, who have had 2 land reforms in a period of 5 years. They have gone and cast votes for us. People who have voted for us are those who have been given the five Marala scheme of plots of land to build houses for the first time in their entire lives and something which they could not have dreamt of. People who have voted for us have been the laborers, because we have tried to do service to the laboring classes and to the exploited classes of the people. People who have voted for us are honorable women folk. But because we have tried to serve them, we have tried to emancipate them, we have tried to treat them as equals according to the tenets and teachings of Islam. But we have not for a moment deviated from the tenets and teachings of Islam. But we have told the women that they have a place in our society. And of course, women have a place in our society. Women have a place in all societies. It is not, these are the human rights. Human rights does not lie in subjective evaluation of a political condition of a country. Human rights lies in the collective emancipation of people. Where is their human right? If women, if half the population, if women are mothers, our sisters and our wives, they are to be kept in chains and they are to be kept in bondage and they are to be deprived of their fundamental rights as Muslim women, according to the teachings of our Holy Quran and Sunnah and according to the tenets of our jurisprudence. So ladies and gentlemen, this is a clear-cut matter. This is a clear-cut matter that the masses, the broad masses of the people, the teeming multitudes of people have voted for the Pakistan People's Party. And what is more, in spite of that, in spite of this overwhelming victory, is it not a Greek tragedy? I tell you, it is nothing short of a Greek tragedy. That what difference would it have made to us if the opposition had secured 5 to 10 or 15 or 20 or 25 seats more? I had told our own members, I told our central committee that I am not looking for a two-third majority. I do not need a two-third majority. The necessary amendment that had to be made, envisaged, had already been made. Our constitution had been framed in a great hurry. And so it was necessary to make 4 or 5 necessary amendments. We did not envisage any fundamental amendment in the constitution. We had no amendment in mind to make in the constitution. And if an amendment had to be necessary in the constitution, it would have been a kind of amendment in which the whole house would have participated, because it would have related to something so important, so national, perhaps having an international bearing, who knows, that the whole house then would have been a party to that amendment. So we did not need a two-third majority. We did not try to seek a two-third majority. We worked, we went out, we slogged it out, we went to the people, we re-established our contact with the masses, we attended meetings. Our meetings were very enthusiastic. I would not say larger than their meetings, because they claim that they have had the largest meetings in the subcontinent. Well, I would not make such a boast, because men like Nehru and Jinnah have gone before me, and I cannot say that I have had larger meetings and processions than those people. But we have had very large meetings. We had had very enthusiastic meetings. We had very enthusiastic meetings. Nowhere was I told, Bhutto, go home. Nowhere was I told that we do not want to hear you. We do not want to hear you. And so, ladies and gentlemen, the point is, it is a part of a Greek tragedy. But it is not even a Greek tragedy, because from the inception, these people had made up their mind that they did not want to take over power through the democratic process. They had said that they will not accept the results if the results go against them. they said that the results had already gone in their favor. And the person who said that most repeatedly was the person who the armed forces of Pakistan know fully well was wholly and thoroughly involved in an attempted coup d'etat in 1973. This is the value of democracy. This is the value of democracy. Because here there are people who are sitting from the armed forces, from the intelligence, from all services. And I'm speaking from the National Assembly of Pakistan. And it is well known to the top generals of the army and to the former chief of staff of the army and to the intelligence of the army that these people who talk so much now about democracy and about the denial of democracy rights, how intimately, how closely, how minutely one of them who claims to be a stalwart of democracy was in 1973 conspiring to have a coup d'etat in this country and who was involved actively in that attempted coup d'etat which was crushed by the armed forces of Pakistan and by the might and will of the people of this country. So the question is that they did not want to take over government by democratic processes. As I had said at the inception, I do not want to impose myself on this nation. I do not want to inflict myself on this nation. I have had, by the grace of God, a meritorious service to my country. I am proud of the humble contributions I have made to my country's cause. In 1965, in the darkest hour of my country's history, in one of its darkest hours, the people of this country reposed immense confidence in me. In 1970 and 71, when this country went through a most delicate and a most brutal crisis, at that time also the people of Pakistan reposed their confidence and trust in me. In 1976-77, when we went through this new trauma, again the people of Pakistan reposed their confidence in and trust in me. And so, as far as my own satisfaction is concerned, as far as my own service is concerned to this nation, I've tried to serve it. I've tried to mobilize its thinking. I've tried to give a sense of dignity and self-respect to the people. I have tried to elevate human values of this people, of the people of this country on a collective basis. I have tried to give Pakistan a position in Asia, a position in the third world, and a position in the non-developed parts of the world. I believe that I have done my service according to my ability, according to my capability. And at no time do I want to remain in this office, in this high and elevated office, as a rejected individual, as an unwanted person. This is not the way I am made up. This is not the way that I think. This is not my philosophy. This is not my outlook. So ladies and gentlemen, I have belabored this point because in the last 15 days, so much has been said and written. So much has been said and written on this subject that I thought I must speak on it. But apart from that, what have we not done to satisfy the minority? Unfortunately, in our country, the minority suffers from a majority complex. And they want to put themselves in the place of a majority and to substitute the majority into the place of the minority. What have we not done to satisfy their requirements and their demands? They have said that there has been rigging, although they claim that rigging was impossible on a massive scale. I swear to you solemnly, I swear to you from this high pedestal that it was not a policy of the government It was not a policy of the government. It was not a state policy of this government to have any manipulation or rigging done. I can tell you, I can take you into confidence that in Lahore, on the 5th of March, after I had completed my procession, at 1 o'clock, I called all the commissioners of Punjab, all the 5 commissioners of Punjab, with the chief minister of Punjab present, and I told them that I wanted to make it quite clear to them that I wanted fair and free elections in the country, no matter what the outcome. The chief minister of Punjab, the chief minister of Punjab is here, and the 5 commissioners, each one of them, the commissioner of Rawalpindi, the commissioner of Sargodha, the commissioner of Lahore, the commissioner of Multan, and the commissioner of Bahawalpur, all 5 were called, and for 2 hours I spoke to them. I told them that all my efforts to have an election in this country will go to naught. All my efforts to build democratic institutions and to give decent democratic order to this country will go to naught if any malpractice is done. Well, in spite of that, as I said, we are a non-developed country. We are savages. We still have to learn how to be, how to inculcate human rights and human values. So, in some places, we might have created excesses. There might have been individual excesses. This happens. It happens in many places. It happens in the most civilized countries. It happens in the most civilized countries. I remember in the 1960 election in the United States, when President Kennedy and President Nixon fought an election, and the election campaign was very close. President Nixon was told to call for a recount, and that there had been some excesses created, if I'm not mistaken, in Illinois or some such place. I'm not sure. Please do not quote me on that. And President Nixon, what was his reply? President Nixon said, the elections are over. I am not going to create a constitutional crisis for the United States. This is a well-known fact of history. It has not been much publicized because President Nixon is a great favorite of the American press. So they have not criticized, they have not publicized this matter very much about what President Nixon did at that time. He took a very honorable decision. He took a very patriotic decision. He said, no, although this is the United States of America, the largest democracy and the strongest country or the mightiest country in the world, yet I am not going to rip this country apart. And I am not going to call for a recount. This was a decision taken by a president who was running neck and neck with the person who got elected president. And, you know, even in this election campaign, President Carter, at the last moment, was told to talk about the pardon and to criticize Ford on the question of pardon and to hit below the belt. He said, I'm not prepared to hit below the belt. I'm not prepared to talk about the pardon. I'm not prepared to bring our politics to this gutter level. Well, elections we might lose and elections we might not win. But I'm not prepared to do that. Well, this shows, gentlemen, the caliber of individuals and the caliber of nations. What have I told these gentlemen who have lost the election? I have told them that I have moved sui motu. I have moved on my own authority. I have given powers to the chief election commissioner which have never been enjoyed in the whole history of the subcontinent. There is nothing in the jurisprudence of the subcontinent in which shows that the powers that we have now given to the chief election commissioner to, on the face of it, sui motu, to reject certain certain petitions. It was to reject certain elected representatives who have been notified. On the face of it, the Chief Election Commissioner for the first time has been given these powers. We have moreover said that we are going to set up permanent judges of the High Court to expeditiously, within 2 to 3 months, not even 6 months, decide all matters which are controversial, and there will be permanent judges of the High Court. What more am I expected to do? Where I mentioned just now, in the United States in 1960, I gave you an example of the most progressive and the most modern democracy, where we have cases of such nature and where we know that political machines like Tammany Hall and Bill Rose and others existed in its own time. Well, then if there are individual Tammany Halls or if there are individual machines and things of that nature, well, that the state cannot be held responsible for that. The government cannot be held responsible for that. But we have provided a legal remedy for it. We have provided a legal remedy both with the Election Commission as well as with under the tribunals that we are prepared to set up, and within 2 to 3 months we are prepared to consider all these cases where they claim that such kind of malpractices have taken place. But I can assure you, and I repeat again, that it has not been the policy, conscientious policy, or the deliberate policy of my government, and I have gone out of my way. I did not have to say this. I have gone out of my way to mention this. But what can I do when I'm not dealing with a responsible opposition? The opposition has to be responsible. I told you just now what was the style, the tenure, and the tone of the election campaign. What did they have to offer to the common man? But more than that, how irresponsible they are. They do not take into account the country's interests. I know that some of them openly have said, and I do not want to mention their names because they are not sitting here. But I can tell you that if they were sitting here, and I hope and pray that they will come here one day, I will, at the appropriate time, if necessary, if provoked, if it becomes relevant, I will quote them chapter and verse how they claimed in their inner council that their strength and their resources and their finances came from far beyond the oceans. Now, is that right for the opposition to speak like that? Is that correct for an opposition to behave so irresponsibly and to say that they were bound to win the election because their resources, their strength and their finances came far beyond the frontiers of Pakistan? How can such an opposition be a patriotic opposition? And in any case, how can such an opposition boast about having received that kind of assistance? I am not saying it. I would tend not to believe these frivolous and immature and irresponsible allegations, because as you know, that our state relations, our foreign affairs are excellent with all countries in the world. We have got, as you know, the finest relations with the third world. We have got the best relations with the Afro-Asian countries. I do not think that Dada Idi Amin would send money to these people to help them in their election campaign. But the point is that no country from Asia and Africa is going to give this kind of support to the opposition in Pakistan. We have very friendly relations. We have very fraternal relations with Muslim countries. I do not think that it is possible for any Muslim country to give any support to such an obscurantist and a negative, heterogeneous opposition. we have espoused the cause of the Islamic world more vigorously than has been done by many of the previous governments of Pakistan. So why should any Afro-Asian country support the support this heterogeneous, motley element which suddenly got together in its desperation to seek our relations with Canada? So there you are. The whole world is before you. I have put them all before you, and you know that these charges of the opposition, their charges relating to foreign help, foreign assistance, foreign interference, is as false and is as vile and is as wicked as their internal charges. I am only trying to draw a comparison that if they can lie so blatantly, so much to the detriment of the country's interest, and claim that they received 25 crores for election funds from abroad, then why, how can you believe that they can implement the Shariat in a matter of 1 month? This is my main object, that they have been indulging in falsehoods, in one falsehood after another, both in internal matters and in external matters. Now, the point is that this ends one phase and one chapter of the history. From the 7th to the 14th, ladies and gentlemen, to the 24th, we have completed one phase. Now the National Assembly has met. But I tell you that as far as I am concerned, I am still open and ready for a dialogue. I am open and ready for a dialogue. Their present accommodation is in no way a bar for the dialogue to begin. We are prepared to begin a dialogue on the basis that I have spelt out in my speech on the 8th of March, in my letters to the leader of the combined opposition parties, and also in my speech here today and yesterday.